Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, penultimate race edition, the Sakhir Grand Prix. We have got a lot to talk about, lots of news stories, things going on. It's just been a bit of a whirlwind these last few days and weeks, and we'll try and do our very best to cover it all in this juicy podcast. Of course, my name is Matthew Gallagher, and joining me in the virtual podcast booth is Tom Bellingham, the WTF1 founder. And I'm actually going to continue to say that you're the WTF1 founder, Tommy, just because I had a few annoyed messages saying, why do I keep saying it? But look, I'm going to keep saying that you basically gave birth to my career, Tommy.
You're welcome.
You're the father of my employment.
I'm your father. I am your father.
And Jack Aitkins as well.
And Jack Aitkins, yeah.
God, Tommy, you're just such a rascal, aren't you? And of course, Katie as well, the WTF1 editor. Katie, I don't have one to really kind of... You didn't found the editing side, but you're on board. You're enjoying it. You're firing out articles. And this weekend was mad.
It was crazy. Definitely a lot of articles to write because news seemed to be happening every minute of every day this week.
But here we are. Podcast. We don't stop. It's a Monday and we still go. So let's do some three-word race reviews right now. Batgirl Project, Russell got robbed. Aaron underscore W01, the Netflix curse. Underscore Chris underscore W, Perez deserves seat. And 727 Lewis, what just happened? Russell did get robbed. Not sure about Netflix, though. I've heard a few things. I think Will Buxton came out on Twitter and said that Netflix weren't filming solely Mercedes or something like that. Perez, obviously, we'll get on to that. That is a big story. And what just happened, I think, sums up pretty much how I'm feeling about this entire weekend. But let's go into my three-word race review first. It doesn't matter. Now, I wonder what that could be about. It's, of course, to do with George Russell and where he finished in that race. As much as it was devastating to see George not win the race, of course, you know, we were all gunning for him. The incredible fairy tale story of going from the slowest car on the grid to the fastest and then winning on your first outing for them. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter because, yes, he may have one less win on his record for the rest of his career, but he has proved without a shadow of a doubt that he deserves to be in the top flight team. The fact that he just picked it up immediately, almost outqualified Bottas, was beating Bottas in the race comprehensively. It was a drive that nobody can ignore.
Yeah, I can't. I'll be honest. Even the talent of George Russell, we know how good he is. He won GP3, as it were, I think. F2 as a rookie. An amazing talent doing unbelievable things in a Williams. Even with his talent, I thought he's going to get in. And a solid performance would be for him to just pace Bottas. Even if he finished 4 or 5 seconds behind Bottas at the flag, having never driven that car before, I feel like we'd still be having the same conversation of, is it time they gave Russell a chance? But he just essentially, despite everything, and obviously the result wasn't there, he passed that test with flying colours.
Definitely. He's shown not only has he got big potential, but he's a reliable, safe pair of hands. I mean, when Russell won the F2 championship, you know, we discussed that it was slightly unfair that out of the young bunch of drivers coming in, he was the one that was sort of in the worst seat in the Williams. But we know what a talented young driver he is. And given the machinery, he proved our point 100 times over.
He did indeed. It was just phenomenal to watch, as Tommy said, you know, there were high expectations after FP1 and FP2, especially topping the timesheets. FP3 was maybe a little bit more of a wake-up call. And I think George even said that he was hoping to get out of Q1 after FP3. And then obviously pops it P2. And yeah, I think this, you know, some people might go, oh my God, you just keep, you know, lauding George for such an incredible performance. But it was. Like, I won't even, you know, beat around the bush. It was such an unbelievable performance for someone to go into a car that wasn't even built around him. You know, he's size 11 feet, had to wear size 10 shoes. Some people would be like, you know, it's just shoes, isn't it? But you try putting on a pair of shoes that's one size too small for you and then going and tearing around a racetrack at 200 miles an hour when every bit of comfort and anything that kind of just will remotely or just a tiny bit affect your concentration, the fact that the steering wheel wasn't built around him, he didn't know all the controls. It was just unbelievable to watch. And at TRL Real says, has George done enough to get a Mercedes seat for 2022? I think yes. I think our expectations might still be a little bit too high if, for example, he races in Abu Dhabi next or this week. I feel like the Bahrain short circuit was an ideal track for George to get up to speed with the Mercedes, because it was a simple track in a lot of ways. I know there was a few difficult chicanes, but overall, you can't really think of an easier track to get up to speed with. Maybe Monza, I'm not sure. But I think for that, we will probably, I don't know, Abu Dhabi, if he does race for them, it could be an interesting one to see if he carries on that form. But as for the 2022 question, I think he's even put himself in the equation for 2021. You know, Hamilton hasn't signed. I know they'll probably go with Lewis, but hey, George is a cheaper option. Bottas, could they just scrap his contract?
I think the when it comes to George, essentially, he was put there as a 1v1 versus Bottas, and the fact that he's comprehensively beating him is just unbelievable. I think if you look at the things that Mercedes will no doubt have been looking at from him, and we've had this conversation many times on the podcast, especially when George maybe was bottling points in a Williams, maybe put a bit of doubt in their mind that if he had the best car, may he throw it away? May he, you know, bin it behind the safety car when he's leading, or do this or whatever. And the fact that he's gone into that race, like you say, never a car not set up for him. He's had to make a start with an unfamiliar car, got into the lead. And then I'd almost argue that his the race he showed, the fact that he dropped back in the pack showed Mercedes even more, while he's going to be gutted for losing the win, the fact that he dropped back in the pack, he showed he can overtake and do wheel-to-wheel battles, which is something we know Bottas has been massively criticised for and can't do as well. And the fact that he put that absolute worldie of a move on Bottas, that is so much pressure. I know he had so much better tyres on, but to go wheel-to-wheel in a car and you think, one wrong move, I'm smashing into Bottas here and Toto Wolff is firing me on the spot, or you know, I'm in big trouble. And to pull off that move, it was unbelievable. What a performance.
That was a stunning move. Possibly one of the best moves, if not the best move of the season. That was just amazing. But like, I agree with what you're saying there, Tommy. You know, there was a lot of pressure on him to perform in that car. Obviously, you're going to get all the people saying, oh, well, he's going into the quickest car in F1. You know, the W11 is the fastest car in F1 history. So he's got a good advantage there already. But it's so much more than just being, you know, past the metaphorical car keys and told, take this for a spin. There's so much more to it than meets the eye. And even off the track, he impressed me this weekend with how level-headed he was and how mature he was. I mean, he's, what, 21, 22, George Russell? And he's, you know, speaking as if he's been trained by Mercedes for years and years. You know, we all know how mature and sensible Lewis is with his things. And for me, on track and off track, he did resemble a lot of what Lewis is to F1. And I mean, if you compare his attitude to someone such as Lance Stroll, who obviously got that podium finish, I mean, Lance Stroll came across pretty stroppy yesterday, despite being on the podium.
Bitter,
and getting that.
Yeah,
and you know, his teammates just won the race, which, I mean, is going to be a kick in the nuts anyway, because there's always going to be that, oh, well, that could have been me attitude. And he said after the race, you know, I could have won it. But comparing George, what George went through and what he suffered through mistakes that, you know, weren't his own fault, they were a huge slip up from Mercedes. But he just was, you know, like, take the rough with the smooth. It is what it is. And yeah, he's really just ticked every single box that I think Mercedes needed him to this weekend.
It shows incredible maturity, doesn't it, from George? When you look at the other interviews that have maybe gone on over the weekend, one of them being Lance Stroll, another one Dan Ticktum in F2, and the way in which they can just come across so bitter and burning bridges in those interviews, not so much Lance, but with Dan for sure. And as much as some of these drivers may not care if they're liked or not, it still helps a lot to have that maturity within you to be able to get it out, face the media, not throw your team under the bus, and just generally show this mentality that is of a world champion. You know, you don't see many world champions that have strops live on TV. So for me, yeah, as you say, Katie, just every single box was ticked with George, apart from obviously winning the race. But in terms of the way that he managed it as well, you know, he was always on the radio. He's so I love listening to his team radio because he's so articulate. He's always asking, oh, you know, I can go a tenth and a half, 2 tenths quicker. What's Bottas doing? I can ride the curves a bit more, blah, 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 blah. You know, he's constantly trying to work out, learn. And it's, you know, when we look at the season gone by and qualifying, Bottas has been a match for Hamilton in a lot of the races. So Bottas, you have to say, was the benchmark this weekend in terms of where Hamilton could have been. I don't think Valtteri was at 100%. Maybe he felt the pressure as well, but in terms of if we want to get a straight comparison between George and Lewis, George is up there on pure pace and able to be a bit quicker than Valtteri in race trim, at least around this track.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go on to the next question. Do you want to go on to the next question? Because I guess that goes into it a little
sure.
more about...
Kieran Carpenter 2, what do you think about the rumours of Mercedes using George to prove to Hamilton that they don't need him and to get leverage in negotiations? I guess very quickly on that before you talk, Tommy, I guess... I don't think it's using leverage as such. You know, George isn't invincible. He's had a great weekend this weekend, but as you mentioned, Tommy, he's already had these problems in Williams. He has crashed under the safety car. He's not the full package right yet. He's close for sure. You know, he's shown that he's got the potential. But Lewis Hamilton has 7 world titles for a reason. He's consistent every single week, and George hasn't had that test yet. He's had one race, sure, and he's taken it with both hands, but to then use that to leverage Lewis Hamilton and say, look, we don't need you anymore, mate, I think is a very naive approach if they do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's... this is one of the worst takes I've seen.
No offence, Kieran.
Yeah. a lot of people. I've seen it a lot. And at the end of the day, I think it's absolute, bollocks that, George Russell, no doubt how good he was...
Sponsored by Manscaped, this podcast.
Unintentional. But I genuinely think it's such a bad take to think that George coming in and beating Bottas in one race means that he should replace Lewis Hamilton. He's not there to replace Lewis Hamilton. He's there as a person that might even take over the reins when Hamilton decides to retire. And then there's also the chance that, you know, maybe it's time that Bottas gets moved over for Russell. The talk of replacing... you know, a guy that's done one race in a car, albeit a successful one, with a world champion. I mean, how quickly are people forgetting Turkey, where Hamilton won that race when the Mercedes was not on it? And, you know, with the greatest of respect to George, that drive from Lewis, that's what comes with, you know, the maturity and the experience. No doubt George will be quick. Lewis was the same. He came in, you know, look what he did to Alonso, but there's also a little bit of immaturity there. So that's before you even go into sponsorship deals, money. I know we've mentioned this before. I'm sure you mentioned it on one podcast, Matt, but the loyalty that Mercedes show Hamilton, the fact that, you know, they've changed their entire livery to support a cause that means a lot to Lewis Hamilton, and they support him so much in that aspect of, you know, what Lewis believes in and the changes he wants to bring, the environmental side as well. They've just, you might know more this about me than Katie, but they've also received some kind of star rating from the FIA. But yeah, it's not, for me, it's just not a talk that Hamilton is being replaced by Russell. It's whether Russell is replacing Bottas.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, some of the journalists put a question to Russell, Bottas and Verstappen in the post-quali press conference, you know, saying, does this show that we've got another Mercedes 1-2 without Hamilton being here, if Hamilton is even needed? And Max Verstappen came back with a very simple answer. He was the first one to answer the question and just said, you know, yes, you need Lewis, because it's in those difficult moments, like you say, in Turkey, when the car wasn't suited to Mercedes, wasn't suited to Lewis, he was on the back burner, and he came through and he delivered. And Lewis has everything built around him at Mercedes, and I know Mercedes were a fairly competitive team before Lewis got there, obviously not the standard that they are now, but you know, it's not like he joined a Williams or a Haas and then has taken them to what they are today. Like, there's been some progress made without Lewis's involvement, but Lewis has just put in all that work at Mercedes. He, like you say, brings with him money, he brings with him sponsorship, but also as a person, he's extremely motivating. And I think that Lewis's involvement in Mercedes is part of the reason that Mercedes are as good as they are, because they want to just constantly do better, because that's the same mindset that Lewis has. I know it's very easy to say, you know, that's probably the same of all the other teams on the grid. You know, they all obviously want to do better and better themselves, but at the end of the day, they're not. Like, just look at the improvements that Mercedes have made from 2019 to 2020. You know, that 2019 car was an absolute beast, but then they've taken it a step further this year. And I think that's a huge part of Lewis's, you know, involvement in the team. And even, you know, you said about Russell, he's still, at the end of the day, a young talent in F1. He's done two seasons. Look at Hamilton, obviously him not being at the Sakhir Grand Prix brought an end to some phenomenal statistics, one of them being that he had 265 consecutive race starts to his name. And it's that level of experience that helps Mercedes, you know, become the kind of team that they are.
We interrupt this WTF1 podcast for a very quick chat about our sponsor of this episode, Manscaped. Manscaped are the only brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. And great news, they just released their products across Europe, Canada and Australia. A few of their products that are prime stocking stuffers this Christmas season are the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the name speaks for itself, Crop Reviver Ball Toner, a spray-on toner that will give your balls a little slice of heaven with their aloe vera and hazel extracts, a Foot Duster Foot Deodorant designed to keep the stankiest feet smelling fresh, Crop Mop Ball Wipes, you never know when an opportunity strikes, so you should always be prepared, and many more. These formulations are all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free, so you know their products are legit. You can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with the code WTF1. Get 20% and free shipping at manscaped.com with code WTF1. Be the ballsiest gift giver this year with Manscaped. Now, back to the podcast. Absolutely, you know, people forget the behind the scenes work that all these drivers do. It's not just turning up on a Friday and driving the car. It's the work behind the scenes, and Lewis is very much known for the person that is there first and leaving last in the day. So, you know, there's so much more to it than just, oh, you know, George is as quick as Bottas, so surely Lewis isn't needed anymore. That's not how it works. And as Tommy mentioned, there's so many more things than just the talent as well, or the feedback. It's the money, it's everything. And Mercedes are not going to just throw Lewis under the bus because of one performance from George Russell. It's just as simple as that. Let's talk about George's race now. At Alessio Di Maria, would George Russell have won without the puncture? Yes, I think so. I think we were robbed of a brilliant end to that race, because you had Sergio Perez, never won a race, probably his penultimate race for maybe forever, maybe for quite some time in terms of, well, he says he's going to be back in 2022, I guess. So for a little while, at least, it was Sergio Perez's second to last race. And he would have done everything to hold George Russell back. And then you've got George, who's, you know, he might be thinking this is one opportunity in the Mercedes. You never know what could happen in the F1 driver market. And you can't take opportunities for granted. So George, you know, it just would have been such a tantalising end to that race. And I think George had the pace over Perez. You know, he was catching him about half a second, just under a lap. And, you know, it's such a quick track that you just get a good run out the final corner and you've got a great chance into turn one, if not the switchback, and then to turn four. So I think George definitely could have won, would have won. And it's such a shame. But at the same time, we're so happy for Sergio. It's such a, that in itself is a fairy tale story. The fact that he was hit at turn four, was 18th. And then came through to win. I don't actually have any words to even... I don't know how it happened. But anyway, George Russell won the puncture.
Yeah. Was it Sergio Perez who, in Portimao, made a very hard defensive move, which I think was just borderline fair, and he didn't get a penalty for it, but I think we were discussing whether it was fair or not. I'm sure it was Perez.
I'll be honest, this whole season is blurred into
one. Yeah, true. But I'm sure it was Perez. Now, like you say, Matt, that we were essentially robbed of that fight. Personally, I think George would have got him. He had such a superior pace. I think he was I watched the race back just recently. He was 3.6 behind once he'd got past Ocon. And then 0.4 a lap before he got his puncture, got to about 2 and a bit seconds. So he was coming. It just would have been really interesting to see Sergio Perez defending for everything. Even with DRS, you just know he'd have pushed it because he's probably thinking 4 or 5 laps to go. This might be the only chance I ever have to win a Formula One race. And then you've got the amazing situation of going, how much does George risk? How much does Perez risk? It would have been so good. And unfortunately, we were robbed of that.
And they both would have crashed and Ocon would have won.
Strange. Yeah. I mean, that would have summarised 2020 season, wouldn't it? Yeah.
When Russell started passing Lance and then Ocon, you know, literally just within a matter of laps, you thought, right, this is game on. And there are a couple of moments when there was, you know, 10 minutes left to the end of the race. And I'm thinking, I can't sit through these 10 laps. I just want it to be over. And I can't.
You want it to be over?
I was like, I can't deal with these.
I didn't want it to end.
No, me neither.
Yeah, well, like, I just was thinking, I just need this to be, you know, sorted. I don't know if I can cope watching these 10 laps unfold. It's going to be so intense. But when the message came over and that graphic popped up saying, you know, Russell puncher reported, I think everybody was sort of, nah, that has to, maybe that's a graphic for Bottas, maybe they've put the wrong thing up. And then when you saw George Russell pit and you're thinking, oh, it's definitely all over now. But devastating. And like to answer the question, would George Russell have won without the puncher? I would have said definitely, but not meant to be. But like you say, we got a fairy tale ending with Sergio. I mean, he's the first driver ever in the history of Formula One to have come from last on the first lap to win a race, which is a statistic that blows my mind.
That's a pretty cool record. Cool.
Do you guys think if George had gone on to win the race, there's obviously a lot of talk about the fact that he had the stewards inquiry and then got scot-free, essentially. They fined them rather than disqualifying him. A lot of people thought he might be disqualified. Can you imagine almost the controversy if George had won that race and then got disqualified, or even if he hadn't, a lot of people would have been like, well, is it fair that they've got a fine? You know, we'd be having a totally different debate, wouldn't we? I think that would have been the big talking point of the whole race, whether it was fair or not. And we don't like to see races decided by a steward's report at the end, do we?
No, we don't. And I think probably the reason why it got off with a fine as well is maybe that there wasn't as much protest from other teams. Whereas if Russell had won the race and Perez finishes second, I'm sure Racing Point are straight down to the stewards saying, look, what's this about? Says here, there and everywhere that this should be a disqualification. So I think it could have ended very differently for sure. But I don't think anybody would have taken away 9th place from George Russell, really. I know McLaren may have had a word because they're 10th, but apart from that, I don't think there would have been much protest from the other teams. But one thing I was quite disappointed about the whole George Russell puncture thing was the fact that, well, I was watching on Sky F1, they just got it completely wrong. Crofty just didn't, even though it came up with Russell with the graphic and Bono was talking, they were saying it was Bottas, and I felt like the drama of it just completely dissipated because they were so confused as to what was happening. And yeah, it was a bit of a shame for me because it was just coming to a T, and then you hear that radio message and you go, oh, well, George is ruined. You know, and you kind of need that drama, that, oh my God, kind of thing, which Channel 4, I watched their highlights hoping that maybe George Russell didn't get a puncture in that version. And I just felt like the drama was completely ruined with that.
Yeah, I agree. That's the kind of, you know, there's certain moments, isn't there, where it's made by the commentary. I mean, as an old person like me, Murray Walker was that person. But yeah, it's a shame they missed that. And even Brundle, I think, missed it as well. Who, you know,
I think Brundle got it because he kind of said something as he came into the pits, and he was like, oh, I was pretty sure that was Bono, But I'm sure that, you know, probably for commentary's sake, he's not going to start arguing with Crofty as to who it was, and they'd just wait for confirmation.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think Brundle was at least on it a little bit more.
But yeah, drama bomb.
Yeah.
Big drama bomb. what did you make of that, Katie? Did you watch on Sky as well? Or?
I did. Yeah, I watched on Sky. And yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think you do need some of these, you know, to compare it to the previous week, Sky did such an amazing job in covering the Grosjean accident and the rest of that Grand Prix. But there were some silly little slip-ups from Sky this weekend. At one point, I think it was Martin Brundle said something like, oh, Russell, you know, passes in the Williams or something like that.
And just, yeah, I heard that.
Just, yeah, silly little things, which, I mean, I'm not saying I could do any better by any means, but yeah. You need that hype.
No, I'm not either. I'm just commenting because I know a lot of people, whenever I say some sort of constructive criticism, they go, well, could you do that, Matt? I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm not doing it. Who knows? anyway, next question. Alexandra Takax. How on earth could Mercedes mix up the tyres? I'm sure they have strict and comprehensive procedures to rule out such a mistake. Now, this one was down to a radio issue. Half the garage heard what was happening, the other half didn't, so they didn't know which car was coming in. So what Toto Wolff said was that usually they'll say exactly the driver that's coming in and what's required, but there was some sort of technical fault from what I heard from Toto at least, which meant that there was huge amounts of confusion, and then the debate of, oh, you know, why did they double stack? They didn't need to do that. Yeah, I mean, hindsight's a beautiful thing. They've double stacked every single time I can ever think of, and they've smashed it every single time. It's just this one moment where a fault has ruined their race quite badly.
Very badly, yeah. They're normally, like you say, execute these double stacks perfectly and then flex about it.
The
on
one race
Instagram.
Lewis doesn't drive for them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? Yeah, like you say, radio message, complete chaos, because one of the tyres was almost dropped and rolling down the pits, and obviously they put Bottas's tires back on, which was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, because they realized they were about to put George's tires on his car, so they took them back off, put his old tires back on, and obviously that in itself ruined Bottas's race, because he had to, you know, finish the end of the race on absolutely useless tires.
It was certainly a very uncharacteristic mistake from Mercedes. They said that a message from Russell was played over the top of an original pit wall call to get ready. But yeah, I mean, we saw Toto Wolff drop the F-bomb live on Sky, which was quite entertaining. But it just was a huge shock, I think, to us motorsport fans that know how efficient and, you know, always perfect Mercedes are with anything they do, including pit stops. And it's mad. I mean, Ferrari made so many mistakes with Vettel during that race, but Mercedes were like, you know, hold on a minute, we're going to take the crown for the worst pit stop this season.
Yeah, I saw a funny meme of like 4.5 plus 6.5 for the Vettel pit stops, and then there's just like a guy slapping his hand on the table with a 27 second pit stop thunder. It's brilliant. But yeah, it was so weird to see such a fault from Mercedes, and you kind of think that the universe wouldn't have given Russell a puncture had that not happened, and he could have not pushed as hard, and he probably would have won the race. So it's just so odd, and obviously we all kind of jumped on the, oh, it was Netflix. Maybe it wasn't, maybe it was. But if it was Netflix and they were filming, then my goodness me, I don't think Mercedes are going to take part in Drive to Survive ever again.
No.
Because that is just cursed, isn't it? Right, Tommy, your three-word race review. Let's move on from George Russell. We're of a unanimous decision that he did an amazing job. Shocking from Mercedes. Disappointing for Bottas, even though it was weird, actually, before we move on, his tyres weren't that old, and they were similar lifespan to Perez, and even team radio said that he was going to be fighting Perez for the win, but I feel like maybe the fact that he came into the pits, the tires sat there for ages, cooled down, and then he lost that core temperature. You know, I'm using my very basic F1 knowledge here, but I feel like that could be the only reason as to why he couldn't get the tires working again, because Perez was circulating on similar lifespan tires.
Yeah, there was still part of me, even after all the kerfuffle, that was like, well, Bottas has got this one still with the pace advantage Mercedes have. But yeah, if any, like, it just all fell apart for Bottas that weekend, really, didn't it? whole race just couldn't have gone any worse for him. Not just the result, but all the Russell stuff with it.
Yeah, I mean, we have to say as well, like, heartbreak for Bottas as well. He drove a rather average race for him, obviously being beaten by Russell, but
he would have finished second. Yeah, like
him just sat in the pits with his front left just completely on fire. And he's probably just sitting there going, what do I have to do to get any sort of luck this year? Because he hasn't had any, it has to be said. You know, he's I mean, I'm not even going to go into the list of them. But in terms of, I think Martin Brundle said if Valtteri had, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. And I think that's pretty much sums Bottas' season up, wouldn't you say, Katie?
Yeah, he's had a bit of a shocker. Don't get me wrong, you know, there have been moments where things have gone his way, and some of them he's executed brilliantly, and other things he's just let slide. So it's going to be an unusual year to look back at everything that Bottas has done. But I mean, he did some good things in like beating Russell for the pole, but I mean, imagine if he hadn't even done that. It just doesn't bear thinking about. So
it was close. He actually finally was the other side, the correct side of a few thousandths or hundredths of a second, because usually he's been behind Lewis of that margin, which I guess some people will say is unlucky. Other people will say, well, just drive faster. Who knows? But right, we move on from Mercedes. And Tommy, your three-word race review.
Mine is Perez at peace. And this was obviously, it sums up that crazy race that Sergio Perez has won a race for Racing Point. And we're talking, you know, like it's almost like the second biggest topic of the race, because all the questions we had, 95% of them were, of course, about George in that race. But the interesting thing for me is the end of that race, Perez obviously had an outpour of emotion that he'd finally won a race. I think it was 190 races that he's done, which is a record for getting your first win. And the thing that surprised me most is how sort of chill he was at the end. And he kept mentioning it in quite a few interviews, saying that he's now like, he feels so much more happy with his future now and more chilled out about it. And he kept saying like, I'm at peace now. And my personal opinion of that, what he's saying, is that I feel like that's him saying, well, you know, I don't feel like I'm getting the Red Bull drive, but I now know I'm a Formula One race winner. Because for me, Sergio Perez, the talent of Sergio Perez, if he'd have left the sport without a win to his name, I think that would be criminal. I think he's one of the best. Before this, for me, if he'd retired, he would be one of the best drivers to, you know, have a full career and not win a race. So yes, it's a strange situation, but I guess we wait and find out now what the future holds.
Obviously awesome to see Perez. You know, he almost felt like he was dreaming. He kept saying in interviews, I think he even got Natalie Pinkham to pinch him because he didn't know whether he was dreaming or not. And I completely agree with you, Tommy, in the fact that he would have been one of the drivers that you just remember as going, how the hell did he not win a race? Especially when he was in so many positions to potentially pick up the pieces and has been on the podium so many times. And yeah, I think he's at peace in the sense that he knows that Alex Albon probably will get re-signed. There's a huge Thai influence in Red Bull, and I think that they want to keep Alex, of course. But, I mean, a quick thought for Alex Albon. I mean, could he have written a worse scenario for him trying to keep his seat? Pierre Gasly wins a race, and Sergio Perez wins a race, both people rumoured to potentially take his seat. I mean, it's just, obviously, Pierre Gasly no longer, but it's just, I mean, he couldn't get any worse luck, poor Alex. I know he's not performing to where he wants to be, but my goodness me, I mean, that is just, he must be having some sleepless nights at the moment. But yeah, Perez, I think that he will just have a year out, do an Ocon and come back in 2022.
He's definitely proved that, well, Ocon's definitely proved that that's a sensible thing. Obviously, Ocon's a lot younger than Perez is, but I don't know. I mean, looking at Will Buxton, who lots of people know is part of F1, he put a bit of a cryptic tweet out yesterday saying that from the chatter in the paddock after the race, that we might get some news on Perez and a possible, you know, see where he's going to be going by the end of this week. Don't know how much I believe that. Obviously, he's got a lot more insider knowledge being in Bahrain at the moment, but Yeah, Sergio said if he's not racing next year, then he'll take a sabbatical. He's not interested in doing anything as a reserve driver. I'm not sure if that's because he's just keen to sort of stay at home with his family and do everything that he can with them. He's got a young son, so maybe he just wants to be based in Mexico for a while and then he'll come back in 2022. But from the weekend, like you say, he's now a proven race winner. He's beaten Mark Webber's record by 60 races, I think it was. Mark Webber took 130 races to get his first F1 win. Like Tommy said, Sergio Perez took 190. He's been in the sport since the 2011 Australian Grand Prix, so like nearly a decade in this sport. I'm sure people that have listened to the podcast know how much I like Sergio. I had my three-word race review a few weeks ago as someone signed Sergio. And it's moments like this when I just think he needs to be in that Red Bull. I mean, we saw after Albon's disastrous qualifying that clip of Christian Horner shaking his head, which, you know, if you're Alex Albon, you're probably thinking, oh, crap. But, yeah, I don't know. Like you say, though, there's so many reasons why Red Bull would keep Albon, but I want Perez in that seat. I'm all aboard the Perez to Red Bull hype train, so grab a seat.
I'd be amazed. I'd be amazed if that tweet you mentioned from Buxton wasn't Perez announcing 2022. That's my gut feeling, because I feel like he mentioned 2022 a lot. He was in his post-race interviews, it almost seemed like he was pretty much confirming that he's got a 2022 drive. Mm-hmm. Don't know if anyone else picked up on that.
No, I didn't, but well, we'll see. We won't have to speculate for much longer.
No.
I was wondering actually if, and this is probably like a dream scenario, that Lawrence Stroll or somebody like that has said, if Lance doesn't perform well in 2021,
I'll
then
boot
we'll bring
out my
back.
Own son, really.
Yeah. I don't know.
Rubbish.
Stranger things
rubbish.
Have happened,
absolute
boys.
Rubbish.
Yep.
He's just trying to get rid of this whole stigma that he's only there because of his dad. Like, if he says that, that means people may go, oh, well, Lance has to prove himself.
Where do you think he could go then for 2022?
I can only see Williams, I guess.
Yeah.
For me.
Russell getting Williams. That promotion.
God. Would that be, I mean, no disrespect to Williams.
Would that be worth it? It depends, you know, with the Williams new investment, if they feel like they are, you know, it's a brand new year with the investment they've gotten, Perez money, maybe he takes a sabbatical and kind of like, I'm trying to think, and maybe like an Alonso that, like, you know, they're coming in for like the new rules. To give it a go as a more experienced driver, and then I guess if that's Perez announcing himself at Williams at 2022, the knock-on effect of Russell begins.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, we'll see. It's an interesting story, and I'm sure we'll get the answer very soon, which I'm very much looking forward to. And the fact that he seems very set that he will be back on the grid, I guess will make us feel a little bit better that he won't be potentially on the grid next year, and he might come back even stronger after a year off and spending time with his family. Katie, let's go to your three-word race review.
So my three-word race review is size doesn't matter, and that is in reference to the size of the track, because what else would it be in reference to? It's quite funny. I was talking to Tommy. I did a voice note. I'm one of these really annoying people that do WhatsApp voice notes. Sorry in advance. But I sent Tommy a very ranty voice note on Friday. And it was pretty much me saying, I hate this track. I despise it. I think it thought it was too short. Everybody would be bunching up. We were just going to see everybody going up the rear of each other. And it's just...
Excuse me? You're not.
I'm not helping my case here, am I? No.
No.
But I just thought it was going to cause mayhem, and that the track was too short and too much of a difference to what we've seen in F1 circuits. But I'm more than happy to say I was wrong, and that actually it proved to be one of the most entertaining races we've had in a long, long time. I think there's a question that comes onto it later, but part of it, I'm sure, is because we've never raced at a track quite like this, and there were so many unknowns, and it's, you know, circumstances like that which we've seen these absolutely bonkers races being created, you know, being at tracks that we're not familiar with. But yeah, I'm more than happy to say that I was very, very wrong in assuming that, but just because it was a shorter lap, it would be a terrible race.
And it wasn't. I was very hyped for it, even after speaking to Verstappen and Albon in the podcast we did a little while ago, where they said it would just be a bit of a farce. I don't feel like it. It didn't feel like a farce. It was a short track, yes. It was 54 seconds, whatever, yes. But actually watching it, I didn't think, oh, this is just an oval. This doesn't feel like a racetrack. It did. There was a really difficult chicane just before turn 10. I guess turns 8, 7, 8, 9, is it? 7,
so 7, 8, 7, 8. 6, 7, 8, sure. 9, something like that. 5, 6, 7, 8,
yeah,
9.
6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Sure. But yeah, I mean, that chicane was awesome to watch. You see the driver's heads just bouncing about. It was so bumpy, so difficult to get right. We had amazing overtakes there in both Formula 1 and Formula 2 into that chicane. And I genuinely didn't feel, because that was the one thing I thought, maybe it'll just feel like it's a little bit of a, they're trying to put on a show. But for me, it was perfect. And I would love to see it again. And in my opinion, I enjoyed it more than the normal layout, mate. And that's what the question was from Raz to F1. Is this version of the track better than the normal layout? Yes. I don't know if that's my brain going, oh, this is new. But I don't mind Bahrain as a normal track either. But I think this is definitely an option moving forward as something a little bit different. Keeps it fresh.
Yeah, I'm not sure, like you say, if I personally think it's better. I loved it, and this was the race I was most hyped for, because you know how much I like novelty circuits and just things a little bit different. Yeah, exactly. I guess back to your question actually about the middle sector, the thing that surprised me is just how much passing went through that sector and how much we actually got overtaking, and also cars being able to follow each other, and still plenty of overtaking in not just F2 but F1, because when they did that race in 2010, they obviously used a bit of that track, but then after that section there was a lot more slow sections and then the normal Bahrain layout, and that's what separated the cars and just meant there was no overtaking. But this layout just worked so well, and I just loved the novelty aspect of it. And my takeaway from this is that I hope this is a change for circuit designers. I don't think it will be, because Herman Tilke designs all of them and pretty much makes the same circuit every single time he's asked to do one. But I hope this is a realization that not every Formula One track needs to be 17 to 18 turns, a 1 minute 30 lap time, a mix of high speed, low speed, medium speed corners. Let's have some variety, because they threw a completely different race into the mix. And yes, a lot of that was down to Mercedes screwing up, but we had two racing points and a Renault on the podium and an absolutely incredible race. One of the best F2 races, like best race I think I've ever seen, the F2 finale sprint race. Yeah, what a track. And I hope this is a change for, you know, a new style of circuit where it's not just the same thing again and again and again and again.
I think somebody on Sky said that this was the first time that whole layout had been used as well, obviously with the F2 and F1. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, if you think of an F1 circuit, the Sakhir Grand Prix layout is not what you think of. You think of, you know, something like an Austria or a Silverstone. But I'm more than happy to see some more variety and shorter tracks, and, you know, not as many, you know, 18, 19 turns, like you said, Tommy. I think it's been a sort of, this whole year really has been a bit of a wake-up call, I think, for F1 to venture out of their very predictable bubble, but they probably won't, because that's where the money is. So
yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? I mean, if, you know, if they want to have more racetracks, do a Bahrain short and then Bahrain. But I guess it all comes down to money and the venues, and I'm sure this is like a very much a discounted rate and all this, that and the other. And yeah, we'll probably go back to normal, but it's always nice to dream, isn't it, that we would maybe see Bahrain short again. But I don't think we will. I think it will go back to the normal. But maybe it's been a tiny bit of a wake-up call moving forward in the future. Who knows? But very interesting. And I think most people were positive about it. Some people not so much. At Franksy0603 says, with 2020 being such an exciting and unpredictable year, how much of that can be put down to F1 going to tracks where they have no data to go on? Should F1 look to rotate in more of these tracks to keep things more unpredictable rather than opt for long-term track deals? Again, for the entertainment factor, yes, your first part's absolutely right. Let's go to a car park. But the problem is, Tesco or any other supermarket aren't going to pay the bills in order for this to happen. And it would be amazing to see us go to ridiculous tracks, but Formula One has to make money. And the likes of Russia, you know, they'll pay the money to have a race around an absolutely awful racetrack. And that's just the way, unfortunately, the world works.
That being said, obviously drivers have spoken out.
I thought you were about to say, that being said, Sochi is a great track.
That being said, Sochi is an incredible circuit and I love it. Sponsored by Sochi Autodrome. No. the drivers and the fans have both spoken out about, you know, how great it is this year that we're getting to go to these new tracks, and it gives a little bit of something new and excitement into the mix. The thing with Bahrain is, I guess this covers the contract. The thing with Bahrain is they tried a new layout. Abu Dhabi we're going to next. It's not really, I'm trying to think, you could probably count about two or three races in the 10 years they've done there that are decent, but it's not always known as being a classic. All these new tracks have so many different layouts. Look at Paul Ricard, there's about 150.
You could have a whole season.
Yeah, there's 150 different layouts or something at Paul Ricard. Why not try something new? Let's do Abu Dhabi in reverse. Let's do Paul Ricard where there's only three turns and or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, why not? Because this has shown that F1 needs to be more unpredictable, and that is why everyone loved that race, because it was unpredictable.
Yeah, totally. I did an article on WTF1.com, you can check it out after this podcast, all about the possibility nice plug there, right?
is it in the wall yet, that plug? Or...
but I did an article all about wildcard races. Obviously, at the moment, there's a TBC on next year's calendar, and discussing what the likelihood was to get a wildcard race, whether that's at Nürburgring or Portimao or Turkey, anything like that. But like we said, most of it comes down to money. F1, at the end of the day, we all see it as a sport. It's also a business. When Liberty Media bought F1 and the rights to F1, F1 wasn't profitable. It was, you know, not struggling. They're still making, you know, billions on billions. But with the help of Liberty Media, it's now become a profitable business. And I don't see them taking any big risks, especially with the coronavirus crisis. You know, that's put a huge dent in not only F1's plans, but for circuits, for teams, for drivers. You know, coronavirus has had such a huge impact, more than just having to, you know, a few drivers off and the circuit being jiggled up. It's going to have so many more implications for years to come. But yeah, it's frustrating because this season, 2020, has just been such an elite year for F1. Like, I can't think, apart from maybe 2012, but like a season that's just been this consistently good, you know,
so
just when
weird,
you think
though.
This season can't get any better. Like, we get a Perez victory with an Ocon and Lance Stroll on the podium. Like, you just can't write it. It's been sensational. But I do think a lot of that is partly because of the tracks. Yes, we had great races at like Monza and Austria, and they're obviously permanent fixtures on the calendar. But some of the other races this year have really just made this year so brilliant with the racing that we've seen.
And that just shows, doesn't it, with the fact that Lewis Hamilton's 130 points clear has run away with this championship. But if we just have five or six great races because of the unpredictability, it doesn't matter really if the championship's wrapped up. I know it would be nice, the dream is to have a title fight going into the last race, but we look back at it fondly just because we've had a few crazy races. And yeah, me as an F1 fan, I'm happy with that. I don't mind so much if Mercedes, I say I don't mind, obviously I will still moan, but it's better when there are these moments of that, you have the Perez and the, you know, the Ocon's crying down the radio. These moments are what we we want to see as F1 fans, where it's not just Hamilton winning every single race and, you know, it's the same spiel. Ah, oh, it's great, you know, amazing to win my 473,000th race and, you know, it's a pleasure to work with Mercedes. It's nice to have these moments to throw it up a little bit, and granted it was Mercedes messing up. But unpredictability, totally for it. And Formula One, if they want to spice up the show, if they want to, you know, get the regulations changed for 2022 to make it closer, why not also try and make, you know, work with the tracks to do the likes of, you know, Tommy's idea of, you know, doing three corners at Paul Ricard, although I don't think anyone really wants to go to Paul Ricard, even if there was one corner.
If we had to, I guess.
But you see what I mean. Like, it's just throw a bit of craziness into it and we're absolutely flying.
A bit of spice.
Yeah.
Bit of spice, and that'll be nice. Right, moving on. Leclerc penalty. Let's talk about that. A lot of people were thinking I'll be jumping to Charles Leclerc's defence. I will not. At Chris R.S. Smith, Leclerc's penalty was unfair as he was significantly alongside Perez. Leclerc's front wheel was parallel with Perez's rear, so Perez should have given racing room. Now that is the worst take of 2020. I'm sorry, Chris, no offence, but my goodness me, he was only alongside when he hit him. He locked up. Perez had absolutely every right to take... Fair enough, he did cut in a little bit too hard, but that's his right.
Yep.
Leclerc locked up, went in too hot, trying to overtake Verstappen. Without that lock-up, he may not have hit Perez and it would have been really close. But it's absolutely Leclerc's prerogative to not hit Sergio Perez in that incident.
Yeah.
So for me, Leclerc definitely deserved the penalty. And Perez was just an unfortunate passenger in that situation and shouldn't be expected to guess that Leclerc behind him is going to lock up and hit him.
Yeah, regardless of Sergio Perez's line looking like he was about to take the normal Bahrain layout, it's 100% Charles Leclerc's fault. It's a desperate lunge from such a good position, not the first time he's done it this season. And yeah, it's just... very silly. I mean, we'll go into it in ABCDEF1, but it's just really, as to use his own words, stupid from Leclerc after he's done what is arguably one of the best qualifying laps I've ever seen, to get essentially a tractor on an oval to fourth. What a qualifying, and to just essentially bin it on the first lap with a stupid error like that. Just so silly from Leclerc. He really needs to sort of get this out of his racecraft for me.
Leclerc admitted fault at the end of the day, which is not something that the drivers normally, you know, their first response.
Because I saw an interview where he said that, yeah, it was a bit more his fault, but he doesn't think that he should be penalised and that it was more of a racing incident. That's what I heard.
Okay. I'm not too sure.
That's what he said to Sky, I think it was, maybe. But he didn't think he should be penalised for it, that's for sure. But maybe he said something to someone else.
He went to Perez, didn't he, after the race to sort of say, like, sorry, no hard feelings. Sorry I almost cost you your first win in Formula One. But, hey, if I hadn't have crashed into you, you wouldn't have started last and won the race. So you're welcome.
Sorry, Katie, what else were you going to say?
No, that was, pretty much it. You know, we saw Leclerc go and congratulate Checo after the race, which was nice. But I was watching the Channel 4 highlights as well. And, you know, Mark Webber said that Leclerc needs to really hone in his racing when he is doing moves like that. And it's frustrating because, like you said, with qualifying, he put on a sensational lap to get into what was... P2, and then obviously got pushed down to P4 in a Ferrari on a track like that. Just mind-blowing. But then, he goes and undoes it all in the first lap, which not good. He needs to get better at doing that, and hopefully with time he will become the racer, the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, he's got elements of sort of Max Verstappen, really. Maybe it's the mixture that he knows the Ferrari isn't good enough to win races, and so he just feels like he has to go for moves that are pretty audacious, pretty crazy, to make sure that he gets in the mix to potentially get a podium. And I feel like there is that desperation from Leclerc. I mean, Vettel wasn't happy with him last race, was he, with his first lap move? And again, now he crashes into Verstappen. So there is that eagerness, which is is bursting into desperation for Charles, and he just needs to calm it down a little bit, because I don't think we really saw that when Ferrari were up at the front. So I feel like it is that desperation of trying to get ahead of Verstappen, who he knows is going to pull away if he doesn't. So yeah, interesting, and hopefully he just reanalyzes and maybe has a word or two spoken to him about just calm it down a little bit and just make sure you're in the race. Because a crazy race like that, Leclerc could have easily been in with a shout of winning the race or at least on the podium. And obviously Max Verstappen was caught up in that incident as well, even though the gravel was the same colour as the runoff, which is very misleading. But I'm sure as a racing driver, he probably knew where the gravel was, right? He probably would have done that research.
Yeah.
Maybe.
What?
I feel like he drove as if he didn't know that it was
there,
to be honest.
I've not actually seen any quotes from Max after the race saying that, yeah, I thought that was tarmac runoff and floored it, and then because he could have gone round, but
could have slowed down, sure,
but it almost, yeah, from my first watch of it, I thought that he'd just gone, oh cool, I'll just drive around the outside, oh wait, this is gravel, and then he's in the wall.
Yeah, because I thought he got hit originally when I saw that he was out as well. I was like, oh, he must have just got caught up with Charles Leclerc, who did just hit his rear tire on the replay.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you say, it just seemed like he was just toodling along, and then whoops, I'm in the wall.
Now I did try and have a look for quotes to see if, like you, Tommy, Max had admitted to not knowing it was gravel, but couldn't find anything. So either he did know and he was like, I'm not going to bring it up because I'm going to look like an idiot, or it's just a genuine mistake.
I guess there's nothing to gain from him saying there was no gravel there, right? So yeah. I guess he just didn't say anything. But right, let's move on. We have kind of mentioned the Formula 2, but I guess we want to say a well done to Mick Schumacher, who, of course, is a avid listener of the WTF1 podcast. Mick, great to have you along once again. but no, you know, it was a great performance from him over the season, really consistent. Obviously, he had some mistakes. I remember Austria, he was crashing and qualifying, but most of the time, he was right up there, consistently scoring points. He wasn't the one that was kind of nabbing the headlines most of the time. That was Callum Ilott. And I think Callum, looking back at the season, will be kicking himself for the mistakes, for example, in Silverstone. He just spun on his own and cost him a huge amount of points, which would have given him the title. So for me, Mick Schumacher definitely was the most consistent, and he didn't nab the title how he wanted to, because it was one of the best races I've seen in Formula 2. The sprint race was just absolute craziness. If you haven't seen it, make sure to go check it out, because we're giving you spoilers right now with the fact that Mick was very much in the great pound seats, and then he locked up, had to pit again in a sprint race. That's not what you do. And then Callum Ilott was sitting third. All he had to do was finish second and get fastest lap, or finish first, and it didn't matter. But unfortunately for Callum, his tyres didn't hold on.
Yeah, it's unlucky that the season ended the way it did for Callum, and looks like he's not going to be in with a drive, which is a big big shame. You know, he's had a really good year in F2. Mick, I think, is the, you know, a worthy winner in the end, and also I think credit to Tsunoda as well, who in that final race he almost finished second. He was 1 point off beating Callum as a rookie, which I think is an unbelievable performance, and I've not seen there doesn't seem to be as a huge of a hype train to say that he's a young Red Bull driver coming as a rookie, almost won the F2 title, and now he's got enough super license points, looks like he's going to be in an AlphaTauri next year. Let's hope that he thrives under this Red Bull pressure and doesn't flop. I think it'd be an interesting one to see how it goes. But yeah, shame for Callum, but at least some people are, you know, getting promoted from that F2 season.
I'm such a newbie to F2. Before I started this job, it wasn't really, I mean, it's on my radar, obviously, to see all these junior drivers, but my priorities had been in other racing series. So to jump into that crazy race that happened yesterday, the sprint race, I was thinking, oh my goodness, is every single race like this? I was messaging Tommy, like, this is absolutely insane. I know that F2 has a reputation for being completely bonkers and sometimes the best races of the weekend, but sensational race yesterday. And like we said, huge congratulations to Mick Schumacher, and looking forward to seeing him in Haas next year, as that was confirmed this week, along with 10,000 other things.
Yeah, it was. It was crazy stuff. And yeah, well, welcome to the Formula 2 family, Katie, because, well, you've missed a lot. And yeah. I'm sure you won't be missing it when we come to next season. It's over now, Formula 2, done and dusted. And, well, I look forward to next year. Obviously, as you mentioned, Tommy, Callum Ilott not looking like he has a top flight seat at all. But 2022 could be his year, maybe a Haas seat, who knows. But you have to get a lot of money in order to race. Even Formula 2 is about $1.5 million, isn't it? So it's just ridiculous. But we move on. Tommy, play the jingle.
Now it's time for ABCDFOOR.
Okay, let's do this. Let's fly through this as we're... Wow, we're almost up into an hour of talking already.
People wait a long podcast.
Yeah, they want a long podcast, but we never usually give them a long podcast when it's a good race.
Yeah, I did see that because I didn't think... So, someone mentioned it that they were like, this better be over an hour because your 2019 French Grand Prix where nothing happened was an hour 20 and then Monza was like 10 minutes or something. So, yeah, here you go. You're welcome.
Just the nature of the way our podcasts work. Anyway, ABCDF one time. Let's go. George Russell. A star.
Easy.
A star.
Biggest A star ever. I thought Katie was going to go, well, actually, no, I was going to give him a B.
I've set myself up to a bad reputation on this, haven't I?
yeah. The pessimist of the panel.
Anyway, that used to be me giving everyone an F, but taken over.
I know. That could be taken out of context as well, Tommy. But anyway, A star for Russell. Bottas.
C. Yeah, I think a C because at the end of the day, he would have finished second. And I think that would be worthy of a C when the person driving your car is
George,
a person that's never done it. I don't think we can downgrade him for essentially being left on rubbish tyres at the end and having his brakes on fire and all that disaster that came afterwards. So,
would we have given him a B though? We got pole? I don't know.
Huh?
Would we have given him a B though because he got pole and then finished second?
No, personally, I don't think so. Katie, you're very quiet.
Katie?
Yeah.
You're going to give him a U.
So I've gone quite high for Bottas.
Oh.
I've given him an A.
An A?
So I've gone from being the pessimist to now being very optimistic.
Wow, that's flipped.
So...
Okay, please explain.
Okay. Qualified on pole, which I know is what's expected of him
because
George Russell has not been in that car and really challenged him on it. But yes, the race start was not ideal. He looked like he was wiggling all over the place, but he got pretty messed over by the pit stops as Russell did. And I don't know, from the other rankings that I've done for other drivers, I just didn't think it was fair to give him a lower grade than what I've given others. I don't know.
We're straight down the middle.
We're tough. Regret every decision I've ever made.
We've never had this ever where we've gone for three different grades. So we're going to go straight down the middle and give him a B.
Okay.
That's it.
That's fair enough.
Leclerc, F.
I gave him an E. Think his mistake, regardless of qualifying, is just too bad.
I think E's fair. Here we go, Katie.
Oh my
A star.
God, am I on something? Like I'm giving really high grades out. I gave him a B.
How are you? Sorry,
he's binned someone off on the first lap.
Yeah, but he also did really well in quali.
Sorry, how many points are given out in qualifying, Katie?
No points.
You gave Leclerc, who took out Perez and caused Max Verstappen to crash into the wall.
I'm beginning to regret every single life choice I've ever made.
Are you sure you've chosen the right grades for this Grand Prix? Although you have been giving reasoning, so I feel like you actually believe Leclerc deserves a B. Tough. We're not giving Charles Leclerc a B.
Oh, well, at least people
ever.
Can't say I'm being a bitch, so...
Alex Albon's highest grade throughout this entire season is a B, and you want to give Leclerc... Okay, it's fine. We'll just pretend that didn't happen. Shall we go with an E, then?
Yes, let's go with an E.
Vettel, a triple star from Katie.
No.
Okay, so Vettel, he finished 12th, didn't he?
He did.
It's a solid D, I think, for Vettel.
I agree. I said D.
I said D. Three oh, D's. Woohoo! We're back on form, guys.
Okay.
Verstappen. Well, he qualified P3, 500ths off pole, got taken out. I think we can give him a B.
I gave him a C. Even me. I think I just got to downgrade him a little bit because it could have been argued as a mistake.
That
took him out of the race.
I can say C.
Katie? I gave a start. No, I didn't really. I gave him a B.
Let's give him a C because Tommy makes a good point. It was a mistake. He could have missed the gravel, but he just didn't realise in the heat of the moment. Albon, I am going to give him a D.
I've said E. I know that's really harsh, but he's out of... Yeah, I mean, finishing sixth when Charles Leclerc, Verstappen and the two Mercedes are at the race and you still finish sixth is not where a Red Bull needs to be.
What did you go for, Katie?
I went for a D as well.
D it is, then.
D it is. Carlos Sainz, let's give him an A.
Yeah, I was almost on A star territory, but I went A.
It's not A. Yeah, well, I mean, the strategy of pitting when... Well, they went for the VSC pit, didn't they? But they pitted too late. Yeah.
Could have been...
cost him the win.
Yeah, like you say, cost him the win. Could have been... I feel like that was his... He had a very weird radio message at the end where he was just making noises, and I wonder if that was part of it. I don't know if you heard that.
Okay, so A, Katie?
I said A for science as well.
Okay. Lando Norris went from 19th to 10th on the first lap. Obviously had an engine change, didn't he? But I'm kind of disappointed with after lap one, the fact that Lando was 10th and still finished 10th.
Yeah, same. I've given him a C.
No, I think B.
Yeah, I've said B.
Okay.
How are you giving him a C when he gets 9 positions in one lap?
Because he's in a McLaren and he's... Most of those cars are Alfa Romeos. And...
Oh, I expect this because he's in the McLaren.
It's true, though, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
we did literally just say that Sainz could have won the race and he is in a McLaren, but I know that they started in different places, but yeah.
Are you going to go away from your B then, Katie, and go to
no,
a C?
No, I'm just
going
to stick to all my original grades because I'm stubborn.
Okay, does Lando deserve a C? Does Lando deserve
I'm going
a
to put a light on. It's getting dark. We've been going that long.
Lovely. Okay, it's getting dark. It's 3:07 in the afternoon. I'm going to give Lando a no B. I don't want to get killed by people that are fans of him. B for Lando. Daniel Ricciardo. B?
Yeah, B.
Yeah, I've gone for B as well.
Yeah, I'm surprised. But again, it was the same as Carlos Sainz, wasn't it? He pitted at the same time as Carlos. And then the people that stayed out, one stopped, Ocon, for example, just made it work. So Ricciardo B, Ocon, I'm going to...
A.
Solid A star?
Not on A star. So I feel like there was a little bit, not a little bit of luck, but I mean, his move around the outside of Stroll was awesome.
A star.
You going A star? I've gone A.
I'm going A star. Katie?
I've gone A.
A it is.
Poor Ocon. But yeah, it's... I just want to give him an A star because he's never had a podium before and he finished P2. Great minerals. considering the amount of cars that were behind him as well, because he was on old tyres and they were hounding him down.
Oh yeah, great drive.
It's fine, I'm not bitter that you didn't give him an A star. Gasly.
Gone for C. Not his best. Yeah, very anonymous. And he got...
Out-qualified by Kvyat.
Out-raced by Kvyat. Completely. Kvyat out of character. Kvyat had owned him this weekend.
So Gasly C, Kvyat
A.
Ooh.
He finished seventh. Let's give him an A.
Yeah. A.
Sergio Perez, A star.
Easy.
Hands down.
Doesn't need to even be discussed.
A double star.
Lance Stroll, A.
A.
Oh, I've given him a B. I want to give personally, but
why get? Why are you giving him a B?
Because
of his interview.
No, because he no doubt drove a decent race, but like Monza, I feel like it was one of those where he said he could have won, and at the end of the day, I was watching the race back, and there was a moment where Perez was closing in on him, and he had DRS on Ocon, and if he'd have gone for that lunge and made the move, he would have finished, you know, he would have been ahead of Ocon and maybe pulled a bit of a gap and he could have won the race. But I think the fact that he then locked up, let Perez through, he kind of lost a better result, even though it was a really good result.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. I guess we have to take into account that a lot of the runners were out, so Stroll probably would have finished seventh had everything been normal. So, okay, now I see it. You've convinced me, Tommy. Great, great discussion. B for Stroll. Kimi Raikkonen. He spun on the lap one, didn't he?
He had a shocker, odd. Yeah.
That kind of scared me a little bit because that was literally the same area as last weekend,
seeing
it
in the background and stuff as well.
Not nice.
I can't decide between an E or a D.
Let's give him an E because he spun.
Yeah,
it was a really poor result.
He didn't get hit, did he? He just spun.
Yeah, qualified behind the Williamses as well.
Yeah, behind Jack Aitken. It was 19th, wasn't it? Or 20th. Either or. No, I think it was 19th. I think Lando was last. Anyway, no, Lando was 19th. Who was 20th? Pietro Fittipaldi? Engine change as well, didn't he? Or whatever it was. Giovinazzi.
B.
D?
B. You've gone for D?
D.
Wait,
D.
Not D for Delta?
D for Delta?
What?
Wait, where did he finish?
13th.
What are you giving him?
A B. He drove a good race.
B.
He was up there.
A B for Giovinazzi finishing 13th when...
I literally, after the Grand Prix finished, I was like, was Giovinazzi even there this weekend? I did not see or hear from him at all.
He absolutely trounced Raikkonen and was solid.
Oh, so what?
100-year-old Raikkonen.
Raikkonen had a spin on lap one.
I mean, well, it's a...
Okay, C. I'll allow a C.
Wow.
Robbed.
D was maybe a bit harsh, Robbed. But no. There's two people out the race. He's finishing 15th without that.
We move on.
There was more than two people out the race, wasn't there? How many people out the race? Four? Yeah. Four were out. Latifi was out.
No, three out. Fittipaldi was last.
Oh, three.
Three.
Okay, cool. All right, C for Giovinazzi. Just mainly because he was unknown and I just went for a D because he was nowhere near the points. Anyway, right, Magnussen.
D. C.
D.
D. Okay, perfect. Fittipaldi, I'm going to give a B just because of the fact that he hadn't raced any sort of single-seater car since February, and I think that was a Formula 4 car from what
so
I heard.
So hard to judge because he's obviously so far off the pace of Magnussen, but like you say, he's never driven the car. It's a strange choice that he got the nod over Delatraz. Like you say,
definitely.
When he's never...
And Delatraz was not happy, was he?
Not happy at all. When he's never... driven that car, it's a really hard one to judge because, like you say, do you go on?
I think he didn't do too bad.
He was. I'd say he was very solid. It's a C or a B for me. I said C.
I'm going to give him a B just purely because I don't think has he driven a Formula One car before this weekend.
Don't think so.
Not sure, but I gave him a B as well.
He hasn't been in any free practices, has he?
No.
So that's an unbelievable performance from Fittipaldi.
He had quite a lot of time out of racing as well when he broke his legs in a really horrible crash at Spa a few years ago as well. So he's done...
It's a great performance.
Yeah, very good, solid job.
Solid. Right, Jack Aitken. He raced in Formula
A-star. One. I'm joking. I'm joking.
I am going to give Jack... Oh,
careful
he's
here.
I know he watches. I know they watch.
Yeah, I gave... him and Fittipaldi a C. I feel like they deserved the same grade because Jack was... They were both solid. Jack had more pace, but obviously he made a mistake.
Yeah, the crash, yeah.
So...
Right, no, I have to be unbiased. I would give him a C.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've gone with a C. I've never met Jack, and if he's watching, well done, Jack, on your amazing F1 debut, but I'm afraid
Don't give him a C and then say well done. That's just not how
it works. I'm just saying well done for
you
getting...
You have to suck it up. He hates you now, Katie. Oh. I'm sorry.
He hates me as
nice.
Well.
Nice. Cool. Well.
We love you really, Jack. All good. And Nicholas Latifi, well, he conked out, was just beat Jack in qualifying and then was ahead of Jack most of the race, wasn't he?
C as well, I'd say.
C? Yeah.
Yeah, C.
Lovely. Right, that was a long ABCDEF one, but that's because loads of things happened. Sakir Grand Prix predictions. Let's go at, well, okay, so I went for the most overtakes all season.
How do you judge that?
Don't. You know what? I think it's a point.
Are you kidding?
I don't think that was the most overtakes all season.
I don't think it is. I think both of mine are wrong. Well, one of them's definitely wrong. No points for that. And at least one Ferrari is lapped twice. I think they were on course for that. George Russell, normal race. He is lapping Vettel.
Twice.
You can't have that.
but it didn't happen. But I'm just saying that it was on its way. But no points for me. Katie.
So I said bad issues with traffic in qualifying.
I don't think that's...
No,
no,
it wasn't. Yeah, I thought that was the easiest point you're ever going to get, and it never happened. That was a big surprise.
Yeah, we literally complained about that as well, I'm pretty sure. And your other one?
I said drivers will moan that they get bored of driving the outer circuit. I've changed it rather than saying oval, because I know that triggers you, Matt.
No, it doesn't. No, the thing is, I was calling it an oval. I posted it on Twitter, and then everybody was like, oh my God. You called it an oval. It's not an oval. And there were so many people going at me.
Okay.
So, and that's what they sound like as well.
No, they the nasally Twitter voice. Anyway. You mean?
Yeah. But yeah, just a Twitter voice. Oh my God, how dare you call it an oval, Matt? Oh my God. Anyway, sorry.
That's okay. But I.
So that was wrong.
I don't think I can have that. I tried to desperately look for quotes of drivers slagging off the circuit, but I could only find ones from Sebastian Vettel, but he just moans at everything, so I don't think that counts.
Amazing. And here comes Tommy strutting in with his bag ready to just throw his points in.
No Red Bull in the top five. Thank you. Thanks, Albon, for finishing sixth and not ruining my prediction there. And
for Leclerc taking out Verstappen, because that your prediction was not based on the fact that they would get taken out and Albon be rubbish, did it?
No,
really?
I lucked into that one. It was because I thought they'd be dreadful around this circuit, but they were good. And Russell out-qualified by his teammate, which he was.
You scumbag. Mm. Literally, Albon finishes sixth and Russell gets out-qualified by 22 thousandths and you're getting 2 points. That's absolutely
and
disgraceful.
I love
well played,
it.
Tommy. Yeah, I know you do. You dirty, dirty man. Right, anyway, two fans.
Oh my word,
predictions.
What?
American Racing 7, Monza 2, a new winner. Maybe a McLaren or Racing point.
That is an absolute worldie of a prediction.
American Racing 7, we're going to give you a round of applause. That is just brilliant from
that,
you. Unbelievable
I can't believe
prediction.
That. To even say that Monza 2, which it essentially was because we got completely random podium, new winner. Yeah, wow, what a prediction.
You know what, American Racing 7, because your prediction was so good, get in touch with us and we'll send you something from the WTF1 store. Hey. I've just said it.
There you go. It's on
Boom.
Record.
Fielding Rowan, Renault second row lockout. No.
No, it wasn't.
Didn't happen. So, all right, let's go to Abu Dhabi Grand Prix predictions now. My two are Russell races for Mercedes, but Bottas is faster, and McLaren will beat Renault to fourth. I've gone for two rather, I'd say intricate predictions. You know, there's a lot of conditions there. But hey ho, I'm not being a Tommy. Basically, I know Tommy's trying to do a comeback here. It's boring. We'll get onto his shortly. But Katie, let's have yours.
I've said that the Grand Prix is going to be a snooze fest.
I thought Tommy said you were changing that.
No, you're changing the other one.
Yeah, I changed the other one.
I mean, it's still the safest prediction for Abu Dhabi you could possibly.
I mean, Katie,
I have to get something, please.
You know what? Your prediction is a snooze fest.
That's rude.
Savage.
To be fair, I'm just going with really safe options because I need some points. I came into the predictions and this whole podcast really late in the season, so.
Oh, so you're just trying
and
to
you've still
up the
caught
points.
Us
so
up.
Your first one's. And so your first one snooze fest. Is your second one? We're going to be racing around Abu Dhabi.
How did you guess? No, I've said Norris top five finish. I'm just. Okay, cool. I don't even know what I'm doing right. anymore.
You're still recovering from about 15 minutes ago.
Still recovering from a week of 9 million F1 news pieces. So I've gone for Bottas win and another Perez podium.
Well, bore off. Right. I'm joking. I reckon Bottas will win, but I don't think Perez will win.
Great
podium. Karan Singh underscore 005. Mercedes 1-2 with Max 3rd. Too easy, I know, but it's Abu Dhabi anyway, says Karan Singh. So thank you for that. And underscore Nick Star, McLaren to clinch 3rd in constructors despite all odds. So I've gone for McLaren will get 4th. Nick Star's gone even one further. I don't know how they're going to do that. They're literally going to have to finish 3rd and 4th without racing points scoring.
10 points behind, are they?
No, more than that.
Is it only 10?
McLaren are like 25 behind. Aren't they?
No, I'm sure they're only 10 behind.
They're
10 points behind.
Is it 10
points? Yeah, because Racing Point had the absolute shocker last week, didn't they?
Oh, it's Renault that were 22 points behind Racing Point. Okay, I'm getting confused. In which case, my prediction is the safest thing I've ever...
Yeah, you can't say my wow. snooze fest is boring.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Look, no one picked it up. I've said it now, it's in stone.
Oh, so boring.
I've never wanted Renault to do so bad. I love so how
I've
bad.
Had a go at you for being boring, and that is literally the safest prediction I've for ever God's said. Sake. Anyway, it's probably not going to come true now, so there you go.
Fingers crossed.
So Nick Starr thinks McLaren will finish third. Brilliant stuff. Right, that's it. Thank you so much for everybody for watching and listening. Thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring this episode. And final thoughts, Tommy and Katie.
What a race.
Yeah. Don't say a three-word race review.
Final thoughts. Please be good, Abu Dhabi.
Okay, fair. Katie?
What a blimmin' mad week it's been. It's just so much has happened that my brain is still fried, and that's why I'm blaming my terrible ABCD EF1 predictions, but there you go.
But hey, Leclerc got a B for taking someone out. We'll remember that for the rest of the WTF1 podcast series. It's just gone down in history, Katie. Well done. I look forward to reading the comments. Anyway, thank you everybody for watching and listening, as I say. And join us one final time in terms of race reviews. We'll have probably an end of season podcast as well. We definitely will. I don't know why I said probably. But for the final time, for the final race of the season, you'll see us again next Monday for the WTF1 podcast. If you want to get involved, any suggestions, questions, etc., hashtag WTF1 podcast on social media. We post on both Twitter and Instagram. And that is it. Thank you so much to Katie and to Tommy and to me, I guess, or you guys have to thank me, maybe. I don't know.
Nah.
Either way, that's nah. it. We're done. No? Okay, cool. B for Leclerc. All right, bye. Bye.
Thanks, babe.
Katie's the fanboy now.